Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hellman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome tonight to AIR. I'm Jennifer Hellman, your host, also an intuitive life coach and writer, and tonight I'm really graced with another life coach who I happened to find through a friend sending me a link to his wonderful music video. Music, it's called lovenowmusic.com is where you can see it, and it is awesome. It is a philosophy with this wonderful music in the background and images, and that is a really fun site to go to. Clute Blackson is a man with a vision, and he follows his vision. He is president of Blackson Group. He's also got a radio program regularly in L.A. on KYPA, 1230 a.m., and also makes regular appearances on KTLA on Channel 5 in L.A. He enjoys pushing his clients outside their comfort zone, like all great coaches do. His method is living your now. Your wow. I welcome Clute to AIR, and I thank you very much for being on.
It's great to be here, Jennifer. Thanks for having me.
I get so excited, I get tongue-tied.
That's right. It's living your wow, but now is the key part. You got to live your wow now, not tomorrow, not yesterday, but live it now. So I think you're tapping into something there.
Yes, very much so. Now, your background is really very interesting to me. Your mother is Japanese. Your father is from West Africa, and you were raised in London. So you really have a diverse understanding of philosophy and really the presence of spirit and spirituality. And I find it just, it must help you in your work.
Yeah, I always felt very gifted, you know, having a Ghanaian father who's as Ghanaian as you can get in the best way, in the traditional way, and having a Japanese mother who's as Japanese as you can get. And then, you know, growing up there in Ghana for about 3 years, we had to leave Ghana because of a coup, a military coup, ended up in London. And then I've been in the U.S. for about 12 to 13 years. So at the core of my being, you know, I never grew up feeling like I was from anywhere in particular. I never grew up feeling, you know, an allegiance to a particular nationality. If anything, at the core of my being, I just felt a deep, profound sense that who I was beyond the body. Who I was spirit. Who I wasn't a skin color or a country or a passport, but pure spirit. And just it really moved me to find a deeper identity that was beyond the form or beyond labels. So I've always had a real profound sense of freedom, and I felt very gifted in that. You know, I remember I was just in Japan a few months ago, and being back in Japan after 12 years was amazing because I just had this real sense like, wow, I felt very much at home there. And then when I go to Ghana, I feel very much at home there, and I'm in India a lot, and I'm in Asia a lot, and I feel very much at home there. So it's been a real blessing growing up that way and having the opportunity to see through different cultures and different perspectives and different ways of seeing and being able to understand a lot of them and being able to see different angles, different ways of seeing. So it's been a real blessing for sure.
Now, do your parents have similar spiritual understandings, or did you really get two different sides that kind of blended together?
Well, let me just tell you a bit about the background so that there's a context there. My father's a healer, a really revered, esteemed healer, preacher, minister. He has about 300 churches in Africa. And, you know, it's, you could say it's Christian-based, but he's really a profound mystic, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
A mystic and a healer and, you know, you could almost say new thought, very metaphysical in nature. And my mother is very much, she grew up in a Buddhist culture, but it also very much a mystical, spiritual, metaphysical, upbringing. So where they had a profound connection was not on, you know, when they first met, they couldn't even speak. So you're talking about two people that were not only from different cultures, but couldn't even speak the same language, let alone talk about religion. But where they met was a true meeting of the spirit, a true love of the spirit. It was at that spiritual level that their relationship really existing, and even how they met was a real miracle. So I grew up in a very spiritual environment, mm-hmm. without any real dogma, without any real, you have to believe this, you have to believe that. It was always reinforced to me that who you are is a child of God, who you are is divine. At the core of your being, what you are is divine. And even though my father had about 250 churches, for him it was always, he always came from a perspective that, you know, the Christ is a consciousness, that in this evolution and process of life, we get to activate that within ourselves. We get to realize that within ourselves and realize the Christ consciousness that we are. Just no different from the Buddha nature that my mother grew up with. So at the deepest level, when you stripped away all the dogmas and all the teachings at the core, they had the same beliefs. Which is, we're all divine, we're all Buddhas, we're all Christ, and we're here to realize, while we're alive is to realize that true possibility.
And with that, it really, that's basically the message in this, in the Love Now music video.
Yeah, the Love Now, you know, wow, just so your listeners understand, the Love Now was conceived, it's a unique musical experience that I conceived of. Mm-hmm. A few months ago, and my vision was to really create a way of reaching the masses, a way of reaching the new generation. So I enrolled my friend, who's an amazing music producer, Alex Gibson, and we created a dynamic experience that I wanted to have people's lives change and elevate consciousness with every listen. So I basically started to write these lyrics that just poured out from spirit, and we merged it with really, really hip music, kind of blending electronic pop, hip-hop, touch of funk, and just weaving it all together in a way that I think has never quite been done before. And the vision is to inspire people, and out of that we create a music CD that just launched in August. And then from that, my vision was, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if we were able to create a visual piece that would go along with one of the tracks called Love Now? And wouldn't it be amazing to create a visual piece? So the video emerged from that, and that's going around the world. And part of the whole essence, you know, Jennifer, of Love Now is what I started to explore and think about as someone who's grown up on four or five different continents, being exposed mm-hmm. to different cultures and religions, was, you know, a lot of the religions, they may not agree on things like karma and the afterlife and past lives and, you know, chakras and who's the chosen one. But when you strip it down to the core, whether it's Buddhism, Judaism, Zen, Christianity, Islam, at the core of each religion, they all agree on one thing, and that one thing is love. That core one thing is the power and the profundity and the importance of love. It's like at the essence of what every religion, when you strip away all of the philosophies, it's really what it's about, is loving. Is loving. So I thought, wow, well, if that's the case, there has to be something to this loving thing. So to me, the ability to love, the power of loving, is the most profound and powerful force on the planet. And I've always had this idea, as someone who grew up in the church, see, I grew up in the church, and I got to see amazing things happen every Sunday. People would come to church, they would praise Jesus, they would read the Bible, they would do all of these great, sing all these great songs. But as a young kid, I saw a lot of incongruities. You know, I saw people would worship God on a Sunday and then go outside of the church and be gossiping. They worship God on a Sunday, then they go outside on a Monday. How they lived their lives wasn't consistent with what they had just been singing about or praying about or meditating about on Sunday. So my kind of how Love Now came about was, you know, I said to myself, you know, it's great to have theories. It's great to have concepts. It's great to read the Bible. It's great to read the Torah. It's great to climb to the Himalayas. It's great to meditate. It's great to do yoga. It's great to, you know, read the Bhagavad Gita. It's great to do all of these things. It's great to raise the Kundalini. But the bottom line is, when it comes down to it, the question I wanted to ask people, and I felt moved to, in my vision, to ask and challenge and invite each person was, are you loving or are you not? And I think that's what it came down to. Either you're loving or you're not. The theories are great. The concepts are great. The ideas are great. Worshipping Jesus, the Buddha, all of those things are great. But I feel it's time that we take it on ourselves and we start to become that. We start to embody that. We start to demonstrate and express the bottom line of what the religions and the philosophies are all about, which is loving. You know, and
yeah.
We live in a culture that, you know, we worship all these superheroes that fly and kill and jump and do all these amazing things, you know, like Spider-Man or Superman. But I think the most courageous act is to be willing to love. The most courageous act is to dare to love profoundly, deeply, this moment, not tomorrow. You know, not someday when everything's safe, when the economy's safe, when there's a new president, mm-hmm. when we're retired, but to actually dare to love, you know, right now. So that's part of what the Love Now movement, the Love Now CD, the Love Now video is really about, is to be a wake-up call, an exclamation point, a little shake, a little stir in each person's life to say, wow, am I loving as deeply as possible? Or is there somewhere where I'm waiting to love? Where am I waiting to love? Why am I waiting to love? You know, so if today, you know, I love asking this question, Jennifer, that if today was the last day of our life, you know, what would you do? If today was that last day, if today was, you know, and we never know when that last day is going to be. We never know when that last, I mean, we have these assumptions, and I wish a long life on all of your listeners and you and I, but the reality is the people in 9/11 had no idea that that day was going to be the last day and they would never get to see their loved ones again.
Right.
The people in the Southeast Asian tsunami, Hurricane Katrina, we could just go down the list. None of these people really planned or knew that that day would be the last day. So I say, why wait? Why do we wait for another day to express our loving? Why do we wait? You know what I found? Why do we wait until our loved ones have passed away, and at that point we throw a big funeral, we put on a great suit, we throw a great party and feed everyone that comes to it, and then we give flowers, and then we come up with all these beautiful sayings about the person that's gone. And I say,
right.
It's beautiful and it's great, but why wait? The time is now. And the time is now to really express while people are alive, while those we love are here in front of us, while they have eyes to see and while they have a nose to smell and while they can really take in the loving, we need to be expressing it right now in this moment. And each moment, every single moment of our lives is an opportunity. Every moment.
Most definitely.
Yeah,
and
every
I have gotten that message a long time ago, and I have to admit there are certain people that you say, I love you, or I appreciate you, and it freaks them out.
Yes.
They're not used to somebody actually saying, I appreciate you, you're gracing my life, you're helping me grow as an individual, and I appreciate and respect what you're doing.
Mm,
it freaks them out.
That's right. That's right. And it's all we really want.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to me that the more I do it, the more people are beginning to do it also, because they realize life is really short. That's one reason why I absolutely love the music video. We will be playing the music later on.
Great.
But just so you know, there is the website, and it is lovenowmusic.com.
Yeah.
It is wonderful. I highly recommend you go to it. Not right now, but please. Go visit it and take it in action. Instead of talking about love, really walk it.
Do it. Do it.
And that's a beautiful thing. So I'm sure with your coaching and stuff, you have a lot of clients and situations that you really see about the love now and being so present. Do you want to share some experiences?
Yeah. You know, what I wanted to share was a couple of things, and that was just to really encourage and inspire your listeners to love now and to really make clear how it can be lived in the ordinary moments of life, from driving in the traffic and spreading love as you drive, opening the door, picking up trash, giving flowers, giving a hug, giving a smile, you know, just your disposition in the grocery store. It doesn't have to be this long, drawn-out thing where you say, wow, I want to just save the entire universe and all the children in the world. Those are all great visions, but I just really want to make so clear that love now is something that can be lived in each moment. And there's an illusion that sometimes we get into that we end up waiting for some special moment to love, waiting for some special occasion. occasion, Valentine's, Christmas, a birthday, until we're retired, until we have enough money. And it's such an illusion to wait. And I say waiting is suffering. So it's so important that we embrace each moment and just see every moment, every ordinary moment, as an opportunity to love and not wait for some special moment. You know, it just reminds me of a story of Gandhi. The story goes something like this. Gandhi was put into prison for one of his peace rallies, demonstrations by the particular general that had it out for him. And while he was in prison, you know, he didn't sit in prison and moan and groan and complain. What he actually did in prison was he decided he was going to design some sandals, actual sandals for the feet, so that when he came out of prison in a month or so, he then decided that he would present these sandals to the very general that was in charge of the prison that put him into prison. Can you believe that? So while he was in prison, rather than waiting, he actually then designed and created the sandals while he was in prison. So when he came out, he actually handed them to the person who put him into prison. Now talk about loving now. Now that is amazing. So I say we don't have to wait. We don't have to wait for a special moment. But we need to seize each moment as that opportunity. And that's really what I want to say. It's available. Look for the opportunities around you. Every single thing is an invitation, an invite. And if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to love and you're willing to serve in each moment, if you're willing to offer your heart in each moment, then it's not just about going to church on a Sunday, but you then end up transforming the temple and the church. Wherever you are, you transform whatever experience you're going through into a sacred moment. You transform whatever experience you're going to into a holy moment. You transform whatever experience you're going through into a special moment. Just by your awareness, just by your intention and your attention of your heart. So it's available. So I say, you know, I always come up I have four keys that I really inspire people to you could say live by, and that's to live fully, like every day is the last day of your life, and to love freely, like it's the first day of your life, to laugh fiercely and celebrate the joy and ecstasy of life, and ultimately, when all said and done, to let go and to let flow and trust the perfect unfoldment of life for your own destiny. So
yes,
those are a few things I wanted to say.
One thing that I do want to ask you about,
yes,
with the love now idea, how much do you think the ego gets in the way of people actually doing it? Or do you think of the ego as a motivator?
I think the ego can come in the way to a certain degree when we come from a place of fear, because sometimes the ego can be afraid. Well, if I love, then I'm making myself a little vulnerable, you know, or if I love, then I'm setting myself up to get hurt, or if I love, then maybe I won't be as free because they'll expect it from me. So I think in that way, if we can be aware, then it's important. But I feel as though the deepest, natural, most natural impulse inside of us just naturally is to love. You know, it's not something, essentially, we have to be taught. As children, as babies, it's there. So if we're willing to just trust that deeper impulse beyond the mind, beyond the ego, and allow that to express purely, I say magic will happen. Magic will really happen, for sure.
Most definitely, and that magic is wonderful.
Yes.
Now, what are some of the suggestions you have for people to get more in their heart and less out of their head, out of their mind?
Sure.
Do you have any suggestions?
Yeah, a couple. I would say one is to really be willing to take a deep breath, to connect with the body, and to feel. To just feel for a moment, to feel the heart, to just breathe and to feel. And in let's say in relationship to another person, to actually feel through that other person and feel through, you could say, it's a feeling through, and just really feeling your own heart, but feeling the other person's heart. And really just feeling, so you don't just see someone as an object over there, or a person, or even, you know, even in a business situation, seeing someone as a customer that you need to get something from, but actually really feeling your heart and feeling another person's humanity, that that person over there is also a child, that that customer over there was also a child, is also loved, is also a mother, is also a father, and feeling the humanity and feeling through the form to feeling the humanity of the other person. And because at that place, we are all one. And I think if we're just willing to feel beyond where our attention might typically be and connect to that deeper core and feel that, that humanity, it starts to open the heart. And we no longer see each other as an object or a separate thing, but we start connecting to the heart and the other person, and there's a, and there can be a real softening there.
Most definitely. Do you feel that at sometimes there is not necessarily like a filter? Because as someone who's very intuitive, I tend to, I definitely pick up other people's energy. I
yes.
go there, I see the love, I send them love.
Yes.
Do you feel that some people might get uncomfortable with that because they feel invaded?
Yeah, it's not about invading them. It's just, it's, I'm just talking about feeling their hearts.
Right.
You know, there's a difference. Like, there's a difference between going into their, you know, energy, going into their
right.
minds, going into them, seeing. It's just, so, you know, even in the grocery store, for instance, we can just walk by, see the other person as just a random person, just move on.
Right.
Or we can just take a moment, relax our energy, relax our body, and relax our awareness and just connect with that person and allow ourselves to feel the humanity of that person over there that might, you know, typically seem a little strange. Or we can just feel the tenderness or the child in the person and just allow ourselves to just acknowledge that. So we're not invading
right.
anyone. We're just relaxing our awareness to feel the beauty that's kind of inside, underneath the physicality of that person, and we're just
right.
allowing ourselves to connect to their heart. There's a difference.
There is definitely a difference, and I bring that up because I have talked to people, and that's something they have brought up, is they feel like they're, by just loosening and acknowledging them, in some ways they feel like they're invading their space. And I just wanted to get the clarification that
yes.
it really is, and it's almost just an acknowledgement of their presence in the world.
It's yeah, how you put it right there, so it's an acknowledgement of their presence in the world, and it's really you really seeing who they truly are. And I found in my work with kids, in adults, I often ask people, why are you so angry? You know, often you'll drive down the street and
right.
someone's honking in traffic and they're angry and they don't even know why they're honking. They don't even know why they're mad. They don't even, but it's like, wow, I feel so frustrated. I feel so angry, and they don't even know why. And I found that at the core of our being, there is a part of us that whether we're conscious or not, we can sense that we're more than just the body. We can sense the infinity inside of us. We can sense the divinity inside of us. We can sense something in there. But, you know, and as kids, we're really in touch with that. And then what happens
yeah.
as kids is we go through life, as kids, we've just, you know, we're so close to that divine kind of essence, but it's not seen. Our parents sometimes often don't see it. Our school friends, our schoolmates, our media, no one really sees who we really are. And I feel as though there's a deep kind of unconscious anger, frustration, discontent, and that how that would be spoken is, who I am, you know, is not really seen. Who I am is not really valued or seen. And that's why I feel the one of a great gift we can give each other is to see beyond just the surface of the personality of what's there and really relate and start feeling the soul, start feeling the spirit in each other and see that, see the divinity. And I think that's one of the most healing, profound things to really connect at that level and see each other. That's a gift we can offer each other.
Yes, most definitely.
Yes.
Was there one moment or one something that really clicked this into place to do this video? Or was it just something that's been brewing in your mind
and it just
came together?
It's been brewing a while, and there's two things I'll say about that. And one thing is the whole project and the Love Now Music CD project came about at the beginning of the year, and it was one of those things that was brewing for a while. I never had any intention to do a video, And I really wasn't even putting that much attention into doing a music CD. You know, I have my coaching practice and I work with people and speak, so I'm very busy there. But all of a sudden, it was just in a meditation. It just came through. And what I found, and as I've been on this journey the last few months with this Love Now music CD and getting that out into the world and the video, I've just seen how that life, there's an impulse of life that is seeking to happen through us. And if we're willing to be still, if we're willing to be quiet, if we're willing to open ourselves to receive what's actually seeking to happen, it will reveal itself. And I'll tell you, I look at what's happened over the last 3, 4, 5 months with the Love Now CD, the Love Now music video, and I could not have planned it. I would have had no idea. It wasn't even my intention, but it was just something that just emerged. I said yes to it, and literally, it's had an energy of its own, and if anything, I've been riding it. Does that make sense? It's
totally.
Like I've just been riding the energy, and I look back at the beginning of the year, I would never have known that this video would have been would be seen all around the world and be inspiring people. I had no idea. So for me, it just reinforced that there is an intelligence to life, that if we open ourselves to it, if we say yes to it, if we really make ourselves available to that flow of nature, it will coordinate and synchronize and fulfill what it truly is, our highest for our destiny and those around us. And I'd say one of the things that really inspired, that triggered the Love Now concept and the Love Now video was I spend a lot of time in India. And Jennifer, I actually went to India maybe 8, 9 years ago and traveled all through India, ended up in one of the poorest states in India where the illiteracy rate is, God knows, like 90%. It's a really poor state in India where even some of the Indians feel a little scared to go. It's called Bihar. And I ended up in the third class section of this train in India, and just my eyes, I just started to cry. I couldn't believe it. And in this particular state is one of my dearest friends. He is an 87-year-old man. He's a legend. He's kind of like a modern-day Mother Teresa. He was a former disciple of Gandhi. His name is Dwarkaji. And he's built at least 200 schools and takes in the poorest kids in India and feeds them and teaches them and educates them in the Gandhian values of service and nonviolence. And it's beautiful. And I remember I went to his ashram where about 200 children were staying. And, you know, mind you, these are kids that he takes off the street. These are kids that are living in trash dumps. These are kids that are living on the streets. These are kids that are eating leaves off trees. They're so poor. So when I had the chance to just be with him in this space, my intention was to serve these children. And as I was with him, you know, they didn't really respond to me. So he happens to be located in the the place where the Buddha got enlightened, called Bodh Gaya, where the Bodhi tree is. And there's an amazing temple there. And there was one particular day, in my frustration of not really feeling a connection with these kids about 8 years ago, I said to him, I'm going to go and meditate in the temple where the Buddha got enlightened, and just going to go meditate there. And he looked at me very lovingly, very calmly, and he said, that's beautiful. You know, have a great meditation, but I want you to ponder something while you're there. He said, you can go to this amazing temple where there's incredible statues of the Buddha and meditate there. But as you go there, just make sure your heart doesn't turn to stone. Because right here, right in front of you, in this ashram, right here, right now, he said, there are children. And if you really are present, if you really look, there are living Buddhas right here in front of you to love. And for me, that always, it's like it just pierced to the core of my heart, and it always stuck with me, and I've never forgotten that moment, Jennifer. That's really been an inspiration to me in that moment. So I would say that moment, when you asked that question, I really linked it to being an inspiration for the love, for the Love Now movement, the Love Now video, the Love Now CD.
And that you actually mentioned that in the words.
Yes.
Every child is a living Buddha right in front of you.
Dwarkaji, my dear friend, was one of the deep inspirations for that. So, you know, like every moment, our father, our mother, the person who's honking at us in traffic, the teacher, you know, our children, the cat, every moment is an opportunity. And we don't have to go to the Himalayas. We don't have to go Chapel Farm ride, but it's right in front of us. So it's available to us right now. So that was an inspirational moment in my life.
And it, the one thing that I've always known and always get reminded is all the answers are within.
Yes.
You have people around you to remind you that the answers are right there for you. You just need to be open to listen to it. And I think in society, do you think that people are really opening up more to listen and to truly hear what their heart and souls are saying?
I think there is a paradigm shift that is happening. Are we doing it at the level I think is available? No. Are we doing it at the level I think it is important? No. But I think it's slowly beginning to happen in our culture. And I was thinking about some of this crisis that we're going through economically and politically and what have you, and some of the challenges that people are facing. You know, I feel like the whole world right now is actually going through a spiritual evolution. And with some of the things that we're going through, with the economy collapsing, it's actually a deep transformational process that I think we're in culturally, where it's forcing us as a culture, but it's forcing each person to slowly turn away from being so outwardly materially focused, and it's starting to force us to go inside. You know, this very thing you're talking about, it's forcing us, because we're starting to realize, oh my goodness, you know, I had this money and now it's gone. I had this relationship and now it's gone. I had this business and now it's collapsed. I had this house and now it's gone. These places where we've placed our security, where we've placed our sense of who we are, where we've placed our sense of identity, this is who I am, this is who I am, this is who I am, is now starting to crumble. And I think as a result, a very profound thing is happening, that it's driving us and it's forcing us to find a deeper sense of security, and it's forcing us to find a deeper sense of who we are in the inside. So on that level, it's a profound shift and a paradigm shift that is beginning to happen in our culture right now, that's forcing us inside to realize that true source of freedom, to start realizing who we really are. Are we the house? Are we the car? Are we the bank account? Are we our stocks? If we're those things, then we really are in trouble, because they're crumbling. So
yes,
who are we really? You know, who are we really? And I think through that, we're starting to be pushed by spirit to access that place inside of us, that real security, that real core that is changeless, that real that doesn't change, that is freedom itself, that is peace itself, because that's where the peace lies, inside. So I think it's beginning to happen, but through a crisis, through a very intense birthing process at this time. But I think we need to be able to have a perspective at this time that this is really part of what's going on, so we don't just stay freaked out on the surface, but we take that time to go inward and reconnect and find that inner ground, so that we can then come back out into the world from that place of listening. And what I find is so powerful is, as we really make ourselves available to going inward, and as we really make ourselves available to being quiet, and as we really make ourselves available to listening, we will begin to hear. We will begin to hear what's actually seeking to emerge through us. We will begin to hear what's actually seeking to happen through us, rather than what our ego or our mind thinks should be happening with our lives, that often get us into trouble. Well, I should, right. I want this, or I want that, or I want this. And so much of our culture has been simply based on, what do you want? What can I get? What can I get? What can I get? And I say, we might get every single thing we may. Not that we will, but we might get everything that we think we want. But at some point of getting and getting and getting, we reach a point of dissatisfaction. So I feel as though many times we might even get what we want, but often the way we even decide what we want is really based on who we think we are, which is just conditioned. So as we start going deeper than our mind, as we start going deeper than our conditioning, and really start to connect to the internal part of us, to that spirit part of us, we start opening to something bigger. We start opening to what's seeking to happen. And if we're able to catch that vision, to listen to that vision, to be obedient to that vision, we bring ourselves in alignment with life. We bring ourselves in alignment with the flow. We bring ourselves in alignment with nature. And then it's not just us in and of ourselves that has to fulfill our destiny, our goals, but It's as though life starts coming through us. And if you look at the great people, you know, Jennifer, like Martin Luther King or mm-hmm. Gandhi or Mother Teresa, or, you know, all these people really aligned with that internal depth and were so guided by that, that they accessed, tapped into a whole nother stream of power and a whole nother stream of possibility that just then moved through them, and you could say did the work. And in a sense, they were able to move the world, but it wasn't them just doing it from their own power. It was just life flowing through them that did the move, that did the work. And so I feel it's happening in our culture right now. It's happening.
Now, with this and with what you just said, that really is the basis, in a sense, of your transformational life coaching. Is it or is it not?
Yeah.
You truly want to kind of unprogram or uncoach people with all that society has kind of coached them to be, to go back to the base and the heart of truly who they are and kind of be reborn again into the spirit that they truly are.
Yeah, that's it. You just hit the nail on the head right there when you said that, Jennifer. Just the way you said it was right on. You know, as a transformational life coach, you know, I like to say that if anything, I don't really even coach people. I don't really teach people when I work with them. I don't really train people. If anything, what I do is I uncoach people. And I untrain people, and I uncondition people, which is exactly how you kind of put it right there. It's an uncoaching, because to me, at the core of our being, at the core of our depth, at the core of who we are is fundamentally already whole and complete at the core. And as children, we come in with that. We come in so in touch with the essence as kids. You know, we're free as kids. We don't have too much self-consciousness. We'll jump on the table and sing and shout, and if we fall over, we'll stand back up again, and there's a freedom there. We're in touch with that divine essence, that true essential nature. But as we go through life, stuff happens, divorce, pain, challenges, media. We start getting conditioned by magazines, by television, by radio. You know, who you are is not enough. Who you are is not enough. But if you buy this pair of jeans, but if you buy this car, but if you drink this drink, then you'll be enough. And we start to be programmed. We start to become hypnotized. We start to, you could say, forget who we are and enter a kind of trance or dream existence, thinking, wow, you know, I am this limited thing. Wow, I am my story. Wow, I am just my history. I am these things I've done. And we start to lose touch with that core. So if anything, my coaching is designed, and I work with people in a way to peel away the layers, to create the space, and to peel away the layers so that they can begin to rest and relax back into who they are. So I don't really impose anything in a sense of this is how you should be. But I create the space where, you know, if you look at the body, for instance, the human body itself has an innate intelligence. And if you, let's say you got cut, your body got cut or your finger got cut. If you were just to create a clean space for your body, it in and of itself knows how to heal, right? It knows how to heal. If you create that space. So I believe that at the core of each individual is also that same spirit force intelligence, that if we create the space and just create that space to really see the truth of people, there's an intelligence inside that also knows how to bring oneself back into harmony, bring oneself into alignment. So I think in one way, being who we really are is the most natural thing if we're willing to let go of the preconceived ideas of who we think we are, the programming of, you know, the 4 steps of who we should be, the 17 steps of who we, you know, what someone else, what works for someone else, but we really dare to let go and trust what's inside. So my coaching is all about getting people to question, who are you? Who are you really? Are you this thing? Are you this body? Is what you're living truly who you are? And many times we say, yes, I'm free, but we're just living a programming. We're just living what we've been told. We're just living what we've been conditioned by our parents and by our grandparents. We're not really living the depth of who we really are. So it's about really getting people to question, who are you really, truly at the core? And then living that fully and allowing that to express, and then allowing one's life and actions to be aligned with that.
Yes. Now, in your on coaching, do you try and help them get reconnected or reintroduced to their inner child so they have that innocence and that play again?
Yeah, I would say that one component that is that for me I found very helpful and important is to help people get reconnected to that inner child, for sure, because a lot of what plays out for us stems from that, you know, at least on an emotional and a personality level. So I definitely work with that and help them get reconnected. Can I give you a quick example?
Please.
What's that?
I said please.
Please, yeah. A quick example is I had a really top mortgage broker in real estate come to me about 9 years ago, and this is just an example of just how it's all interconnected. And he called me up. He says, I'm probably the number three guy in California in terms of loans. Very successful, but he said, "Coot, I'm not happy with my life. I'm miserable. I can buy anything, do anything, but I'm just, you know, there's no joy in my life. There's so much joy that's just missing in my life, you know." And he said, "What really upset me is I met the number one guy in loans. This guy does double my business, has three kids, has a wife. He says I don't have any of that. He said, "Coot, I work 7 days a week. I don't take vacations. My life is just dry and devoid of joy." And he says, and I have this thing where I procrastinate. And I said, "What do you mean you procrastinate?" He says, "You know, I'm stuck. I get frozen. I procrastinate." And I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "Sometimes I'm supposed to make some phone calls. I'm supposed to do some prospecting." And he said, "It's as though I just check out. It's as though I go blank. It's as though I can't get myself to follow through. And I'm literally There's just a blank in my mind, and I stare at the wall for an hour or two, and I don't know what happens, and I waste so much time." So I started working with this guy, and just to cut a long story short, as we were sitting down face to face, I wanted to work with him on this issue of procrastination, and I said, I asked him, you know, "Tell me about your father." And he looked at me and he said, "What does that have to do with procrastination and my business?" And to me, every area of our life is totally interconnected. And when we really get to the core of the core, it starts shifting everything. So he started to tell me, he said, "Coot, when I was age 8, I grew up on a farm in Texas. When I was age 8, my mother died. We didn't really speak about it from that moment onwards. We just went on like nothing happened." And then he says, "Coot, from that moment, from age 8, because we grew up on a farm, my father would wake me and my siblings up 5 o'clock every morning, and he would make us work in the farm." This is an 8-year-old kid whose mother just died, and he's 8. And, you know, he made us work in the farm, go to work, clean, sweep 2-3 hours in the morning, go to school, come home from school again, send us back to the farm, work, eat, do homework. He said it was like this for 10 years. During holidays, we'd have to work all day. I mean, you kind of get the picture, you know, that this guy, you know, so didn't get to have a childhood. So here he is as an 8-year-old kid. It was as though this 8-year-old, you know, kids need to be playful and have the fun and the joy. It was totally suppressed and disconnected. So, you know, to answer your question, even though he's a 37-year-old man at that point, literally when I worked with him, we really got in touch with this part of him that even though he's 37, there's still an 8-year-old aspect of him kind of in his unconscious back there that says, "Hey, I want to play. I want to play." And literally, it's as though there's also a father part of him that says, "No, you have to work." So inside of this one person, there's an 8-year-old part, there's a 37, there's a father part that says you have to work. So literally there's a conflict. There's an internal split inside. One part wants to play, one part says work, and there's a split. How does that manifest in procrastination? So I had to create a process that really helped him first get in touch with that, which brought up a lot of grief of, wow, I can't believe how much I've disconnected from that kid inside of me. I can't believe how much I shut that part down. And that part in him was grieving. So there was a lot of tears. And then we basically integrated the two parts of him so he was able to come back into much more wholeness. So when we don't acknowledge parts of us, like the inner child, a lot of our behaviors end up being run by those parts of us, by the kid in us, until we really deal and acknowledge and integrate that part of us back into us and become whole again. So I feel it. It's so important. It's such important work. And, you know, what's funny is I work with a lot of leaders in the world in leadership positions, and I often say, you know, a lot of our world is being run by little boys that actually, you know, haven't integrated that inner child. So the wounded child aspect is literally running their lives, running their relationships, and leading to suffering. So it's an important piece to acknowledge.
And I have found in my own practice that it's literally the inner child, and even with myself, I will admit that my inner child will have a tantrum, and it's like, no, you're going to listen to me now. And as I start listening to them, things open up. It's like one thing my inner child always wanted to do was take dance lessons, and now I am.
Hopefully you're dancing now.
Oh, I am definitely dancing, and I'm getting compliments like you're a natural dancer, and this is what you're supposed to be doing, and I'm having
a
blast. And
I think everyone should dance.
Oh, it just loosens everything up. It just, it reconnects you. It grounds you. So it's a really beautiful thing. So the inner child is always been an important piece, I think, because there is so many people in society now that have really lost their childhood at an early age.
Absolutely. And I think so much of the depression and the misery and the discontent is really because we've disconnected and we are not healing and acknowledging that part of us that's just kind of stuck in a certain age, stuck back there. And a lot of our behaviors and our responses in life and relationships is just that part of us acting out. So it's really important to work with that and integrate that and bring loving and compassion to those parts of us. So we become whole again.
Yes. Now, you have a program, talk about total integration, that you take people to India.
Oh, yes. You're talking about the liberation experience.
Yes.
Yes.
And that really is, you basically take everything away from them and say, okay, find yourself.
Yeah, basically, I call that the liberation experience. And what can I say about that? That's probably the most intense, dynamic, sacred, the highest level work that I do when I work with someone. It's in a nutshell, it's a no-hold-barred, 2-week transformational process. It's a 24/7 one-on-one process where I take one person at a time. It's not in a group. I take one person at a time to India and customize a real sacred process for that person where I take away their passport, I take away their money, I take away their basically everything. They have no cell phone. They have no contact with the outside world. And in 2 weeks, I facilitate a process that is designed to feel into where their biggest blocks are, where their biggest limitations are, where they're holding back from love, where they're disconnected, and what is really in the way of them fully expressing their true, authentic selves in the world as fully as possible. And I customize a process that pushes up against those edges, and I throw them in situations that push up against the deepest fears, and situations spontaneously arise just as we're on this journey that trigger their deepest fears, and we get to work with them through that and unravel them through that. So during that time, I really use India as a backdrop, basically, to facilitate this process. And we go into the biggest slum in Asia, for instance, for a day, and we go watch bodies burning and go to the Ganges River and into the Himalayas, and it's just a non-stop journey that is really sacred, really, 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 really profound. And again, part of that vision came to even create this process about 9 years ago when I was on the back of that train in India, in the poorest state in India, in Bihar. And as I was on the back of this train in the third class section, I remember being with the poorest people in the entire world for 7 hours, standing with them for 7 hours. I could not believe what I saw on this train. I could not believe that this was still going on in the year 2000 and something. While, you know, on the other side of the world, people were living a life of luxury. You know, I couldn't believe it. And literally, I remember seeing this woman who had five children. They were all sprawled across the floor, and they were kind of sick, and they were coughing on me, and my heart broke at the suffering of just another part of humanity. And then the next moment, you know, an hour or so later, I remember looking into this woman, the same woman's eyes, and then it was as though what was looking at me and what was looking at her was the exact same thing. And in that moment, I felt such a profound level of oneness, a profound level of connection, all kind of separation dissolved. And I had this vision inside that I thought, wouldn't it be amazing if George Bush was on this train right now? Or wouldn't it be amazing if, you know, the head of Nike or the head of Google or world leaders or people that wanted to really lead the world or be in leadership positions were actually on this train and had this experience? How would that impact their policies? How would that impact how they led? How would that impact, you know, how they interacted and their visions to use their positions of power? And the whole India intensive, the liberation experience emerged from that. And it's a deep dive where I really, at the deepest level, strip people of those layers and conditionings and really get to ask people that question and facilitate, you know, who are you? Who are you really? When you take away all those things that you may have identified as yourself, you know, the house, the car, the clothes, the makeup, the cell phone, the laptop, the internet, the friends, when you take all of that away and we dive deep, who are you really? Who are you truly when you take all of that away? So we take all of that away and we begin. You could say we begin the journey at surrender once we take all of that away, and we get to see in that space what emerges. So it's a deep dive.
Very
deep. It's been amazing to see what's happened. I've done about 7-8 of these journeys. It's amazing to see what's happened on these journeys, and it's so humbling each time.
Yes. Now you have other methods, other programs that aren't quite as intense, because that is very, I did something similar with a master spiritual teacher. We didn't go to India, but it was basically getting to the core of what's blocking you and what's keeping you back. And it was 10 days and it was very intense.
Yeah.
And I have more respect for myself because of understanding the depth of everything that I was holding on to and was willing to really surrender it. And I honor anyone, especially you, that is helping people guide them through that, because it really is an interesting experience from someone who's done it, but also you must get some kind of transformation yourself through watching this, being the witness to this person's transformation.
Absolutely. Each time I do it, I go through so much myself, and it's incredible to facilitate the process, to be used to facilitate that process, and to really be of service, you know. And my deepest vision, commitment, and request is to be of the deepest service to humanity in the highest way possible. And to me, that's my prayer. That's my prayer. Yeah. And I always encourage that to be the prayer of the prayer, so that versus, you know, what can I get? But really, let's open ourselves. I feel we're moving into a different time. We're moving into a new paradigm. We're moving into a new generation where we're moving from the old paradigm of what can I get and what can I get and how can I get from you and how can I use you, and to a new era of what can I give? What's seeking to happen? How can I be used for the highest service by Spirit? So I say, let's allow that to be our prayer. You know, how can I be used by the universe? How can I be used by life? How can I make myself as fully available to life as possible to use me? Because life has an intelligence, and that life intelligence was here before us. It's what's functioning us, and it's what will be here even when we're gone. So if we're able to trust that intelligence, we will tap into a stream of energy that is profound, and amazing miracles and amazing things will start happening through us. And what I'd say is, for some of your listeners who, you know, may not be able to go to an India or do a 10-day intensive like you went through, Jennifer, is even just to begin by asking themselves the question, you know, what if today was the last day of my life? And just ask that question: what if today was the last day of my life? What do I feel? What's I'm given? What hasn't been lived inside? What hasn't been expressed? Where do I feel I'm holding back? Where do I feel I'm not speaking the truth? Where do I feel I'm being authentic? Inauthentic? Where do I feel like, my life is not aligned? And just to begin feeling that for a moment and
right.
begin that questioning inside of, wow, what regrets would I have? And,
mm-hmm.
and being willing to be honest with oneself in that beginning process as to where you're currently at. And asking that question, I think, will begin to open up a whole nother realm of possibility, a whole nother space to go deeper, even
yes.
exactly where you are right now. So
yes.
that's why I would love to encourage the listeners to start, to just start, to begin right now.
Yes, and basically that is kind of the whole premise of the dance. It's like, what childhood dreams, as I said,
yes.
did you fulfill?
Yes.
And what things do you really want to get done before
yes.
it's too late?
Yes.
So I literally wrote a list of everything as a kid I really didn't do. And that either because of money or situation, I held myself back.
Mm.
And then I went back and said, okay, what did I learn from that experience?
Mm.
What opened up inside of me? Because of that experience.
Yes.
And it really has helped me give even more and be
yes.
more present. And the
yes.
other thing that I think is really important with what you're doing is the fact that it does start a domino effect.
Yeah,
if
absolutely.
You start giving, the person you give to, guess what? They'll start giving more.
Yes.
So you're being a
yes.
role model to show people the highest potential of humanity. By just being present in the now, know that everybody has that spark of love of the
yes.
universe.
Yes.
Recognizing it and letting go of the negative stuff. Yeah, there's
yeah.
a lot of crap around there. But overall, there's still mainly that spark of love.
Mm-hmm.
And just expanding that. And so
yeah.
that's why your work is just so awesome. And
oh, thanks.
As soon as I saw that video, which we will be playing the music really soon, I had to have you on. I mean, I didn't even finish watching it. I was okay, how can I contact him? I got to have him on.
I'm honored to be here with you.
And, I mean, even the radio show was another childhood dream that I always wanted to do. And Spirit is giving me a lot of opportunities. And
yeah.
so I want to reaffirm to the audience that what he's speaking is really truth and really something to look into.
Thank you.
So it's a wonderful experience for everybody to really feel the heart and to listen to their soul.
Yes.
And you give them that opportunity through this coaching. And
yeah.
your website, which I definitely want to mention one more time. You have two websites or do you
two
have
websites,
more now?
Yes. We have two main websites. One you mentioned, which is the lovenowmusic.com. Website, and the second one is pretty much my personal direct website, which is kuteblackson.net, and that's kuteblackson.net. And I'd love to for all the listeners to come join me there and explore the site there and be inspired. And I have a free newsletter that you can sign up for and continue to be inspired throughout the month, so I'd love to hear from your listeners.
And there is a lot of information on there, and go play on the Love Now music. I mean, I think it's fun. You start cursoring, you start drawing, and you can change. It really is playing with that inner child. Within
Talk
you.
About the inner child, right?
Yeah, and
yeah.
it's a lot of fun. So how long is the song?
The Love Now song is about 5 minutes.
Okay. So I want to make sure to play it completely, and I want to thank you very much. It's been awesome having you on. You are always welcome to come back.
I'd love to come back soon.
So anytime you want to come back, just let me know.
Great.
I hope you have continued success. You're everywhere, and we need you, and I thank you for doing it.
No.
So with that, this is Jennifer Hellman saying, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new insights, and inspirations. Until next week, many blessings and good night.